Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Rab Meir Kahana, and Yosef ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, first of all, I want to apologize for the fact that this program is late tonight, that we're putting the program out late tonight. The reason the program is late is because we had these technical mishaps, these technical occurrences that unfortunately delayed the start of the program. So I apologize for that. But this is going to be a very happy program. Why? Two reasons. Number one, we have our new news sites up and running. Our new site in Hebrew and our new site in English. That's the first thing. And secondly, we have some good news in our battle against the anti-Semites of Facebook. First, let's start with our new news sites. Well, once again, our great admin Shlomo has come through for us. The talent of our brilliant admin is something that we can clearly see on these great new news sites. You know, when a major news corporation, whether it's a news network like Fox or NBC or ABC or CBS, when they put up a news site, or when a newspaper or a news wire like the Associated Press or Reuters, when they put up a news site, they have to hire a whole team of people, 10, 15 people, staff, a whole team of people. And each person specializes in a different aspect of putting up the news site. Because it's a complicated process, putting up a news site that's going to work right, and there are all different types of aspects to the news site. We have only one person on staff that does our technical innovations for us, and that is Shlomo. Shlomo is the only technical person we have. And he, by himself, put up these two news sites, one in English, one in Hebrew, all by himself. And I think if you look at them, you'll see they look as professional and as good as any of the big, major news media sites out there. And the news media sites that are put up there are put up by companies that have multi-million dollar budgets to hire the most professional people to do this. We have one person, Shlomo, who does all of this for us. Isn't this incredible? And it really looks as good, in my opinion, as the major news sites out there. So we have a lot to be proud of. I'm very, very proud of Shlomo, and I'm very, very proud of our great news sites. And I'm now going to ask you, of course, to help us with the news sites. There are three things you can do to help us with the news sites in terms of making the news sites more successful. Actually, there are four things. Number one, join the site. Become a member. Sign up. It takes 2 or 3 minutes. In 2 or 3 minutes, you can sign up. You can become a member. Join the site. Number two, respond with comments to posts on the site. When you see posts, whether it's videos or whether it's articles, respond. Respond to those posts with comments. And of course, make them good comments. They don't have to be the comments of a professor at a university. They don't have to be perfect, but make them, you know, good comments, the type of comments that will make the site more interesting and more inviting. The more people join and the more people comment, the more people that comment and the more people that come to the site, the stronger our position will be in the search engines. So those are two things. Joining the site, responding with comments to posts. Also, vote in our polls. We have polls on the sites. Vote in the polls. Number three, the third thing. Publicize the sites all over the place. If you have a Facebook page, if you have people that you email, if you have friends and relatives, acquaintances that you think might be interested, let them know about the site. Tell them about the site. If you know Israeli Jews, tell them about the Hebrew site. So we've got an English site, we've got a Hebrew site. Publicize it as much as you can. Publicize it and bring other people to the site as well. So those are the three things you can do to help the site in terms of spreading the word. Number one, you personally should join the site. Number two, comment and on posts and comment on videos. Make your comments on the site. As many comments, the more the better. And vote in polls, of course. And number three, publicize the site as much as possible. Spread the word everywhere you can, whether it's on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, wherever you are, through emails, through friends that you know. Spread the word about the site. Those are the first three things that we ask you to do. And the fourth thing we ask you to do, of course, is to support us financially so that we can advertise the site, the Hebrew site. The Hebrew site is one that we want to advertise. And we want to begin eventually. I don't know how we're going to do it yet. We first have to see how this works out and where it's worthwhile for us to try advertising. But eventually we're going to be trying to advertise the Hebrew site. So we need your financial support to do that. And you've already seen how successful we were on the Facebook page that we had. We had a Facebook Hebrew page. We did a modest advertising campaign for 3 months. And in 3 months, we got over 27,000 members. 27,406 members, to be exact. 27,406 members joined our Israeli Hebrew Facebook page. In a country of only 6 million Jews, in 3 months, with a modest budget, we got over 27,000 members. So our message resonates. Our message is a message that many Israeli Jews do find appealing. And they do believe that we make sense. A lot of Israeli Jews think we make sense. Of course, you have self-hating Jews in Israel too, and you have stupid people everywhere who want to surrender and who want to be blind and want to believe what they want to believe and refuse to face reality and refuse to learn from history. Of course, you're going to have people like that. But we've proven that tens of thousands of Israelis joined our site in 3 months with just a modest advertising budget in a small country like Israel. So obviously, what we've been saying all these years about how our movement can become a mass movement if we had a decent budget, obviously that's true. Now, it's true they took our Facebook page down. But in the meantime, we were exposed to all these tens of thousands of people. Now, in order to publicize the Hebrew site, we're going to have to do advertising again. We're going to have to do this once again to advertise the site. And this time, Facebook and YouTube and all the other censors that there are out there, they can't censor us. They can't take us down this time. This is on our server. This is our own independent news site. So they can't take us down this time. And so we need you to help us with checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box. Every check, every money order, every cash donation really does make a big difference. It really helps us. It will help us reach many people with our message and with the truth. Many more people will be reached if we have your support. Those of you that for convenience sake would rather support us with your credit card, you can easily do that as well. You just go to the Hebrew site now, hayamin.org, news site, hayamin.org. On top, there's a donate button in English. There's also a donate button in Hebrew, by the way. If there are Israelis who want to donate, we now have a donate button in Hebrew. And people can donate in shekels if they want to donate in Israel. It's all in Hebrew. So we have a donate button in English, donate button in Hebrew. We need your financial support as well. So those are four things that you can do to help us. Join the site, respond with comments to posts, publicize the site as much as possible all over the place, and help us financially. Okay. So much for our new news site. And by the way, our new news site in Hebrew, we're going to be dealing with the essential issues that are facing the people of Israel, obviously. Next year, there probably are going to be new elections in Israel. We want to make our voices heard with those new elections. We're going to be dealing with all the issues that are essential to Israel's survival, God willing. And on the English site, 2 days from now, we're going to have the midterm congressional elections are going to be over. 2 days from now. Election day is 2 days from now. As soon as the elections are over on Tuesday, Starting on Wednesday, the presidential campaign for 2016 begins. We have in American politics for 2 years, there's a presidential campaign. The candidates raise money and they go to the primary and caucus states and they organize and they start announcing their candidacy. And next year already, we're going to have debates between the candidates running for the Republican nomination and the Democrat nomination for president. So it all begins in the next few days. The presidential campaign begins. Election Day 2016, Election Day for president, is only 2 years from now, believe it or not. How time flies. And so in American politics, that's the presidential campaign begins 2 years before the election. That's how it works. And so we're going to, on our English page, we're going to want to make our voices heard. We're supporting Ted Cruz for president. We're going to oppose Hillary Clinton. We're going to oppose Obama's policies, obviously. And we're going to try to make our voices heard as well in the presidential election campaign. That's one of the things we're going to be doing, in addition to the fact that we're going to be dealing with other issues that are vitally important on the English language site. And you can see some of the issues that we're dealing with, some of the articles that are there and some of the videos that we're going to be putting up. So I think it's a very exciting time for us. We have a chance now, without being afraid of Facebook not liking it or Twitter not liking it or YouTube not liking it or some other multinational, multi-billion dollar, politically correct corporation not liking it. We don't have to worry about that now. We've got our page. We're going to continue to publicize our page on Facebook and on Twitter. And on YouTube, we're going to use them to publicize us. But if they take our pages down there now, that's not our main thing anymore. Our main thing now, the main thing we're using to get our points across in Hebrew and in English is going to be on our own web server. So this is a tremendous point of progress for us. This is really a fantastic new beginning, God willing. And we owe Shlomo, of course, a debt of gratitude for all the hard work he has done. And he worked very, very hard to do this. And all of you now, we need all of you to join in a team effort. We got to publicize this and bring this to the attention of as many people as possible. I'm going to be doing videos publicizing it. We're going to be doing everything we can to publicize it. We've got to make as many people as possible come to the site and turn these into active news sites with comments and all types of interesting articles and videos and polls. That's what we've got to do now. That's our job. It should be a team effort to make this successful. So that's our new news sites for this week. And I have something else that might surprise people, and it's in regard to our Facebook page. And I'm talking about the Hebrew Facebook page that had over 27,000 views that was taken down by the anti-Semites, the vicious evil anti-Semites of Facebook. Yimach shmam v'zichram shem rashayim yirkab. May their names and memories be obliterated. May the memory of the wicked rot. You know, we had an advertising campaign on Facebook, and we put ads in to publicize the page, and then they took the page down. And of course, that's a chance you take on Facebook. We're not going to have that. If we advertise for our own page, we're not going to have that situation anymore. But on Facebook, that's a chance you take. And we took that chance. It wasn't a waste because tens of thousands of Jews joined us and in Israel. And we exposed ourselves to hundreds of thousands of new Jews in Israel who now know about us, know about our point of view, and were impressed with the quality of our page because it was a very high quality page. However, that's not the end of the story. You think that I sat back and allowed them to charge us without putting up a fight? I went to the credit card company and I immediately initiated chargebacks. A chargeback is when you pay for something with your credit card, as we did in order to advertise on Facebook. That's their system. You got to use a credit card. I went to the credit card company and I demanded that we get our money back. I said that Facebook, in effect, is stealing from us. We advertise on their site, spend money to advertise our page, our Facebook page, and then they take our Facebook page down. So I challenged it. Let me tell you the results so far. We have almost all of the results in so far with the credit card company. They made final rulings on this, and I've been fighting this. I didn't want to mention it before because we have a lot of enemies out there, but They've made final rulings on it, so now I can bring you the news with the credit card company. And you know, usually with a credit card company, you win nothing. The credit card company always sides, the vast majority of times, if there's a dispute between a big company like Facebook and people, you know, people like us who are obviously not wealthy or powerful people, the credit card company almost always rules in favor of the big company. Miraculously, we won over 80% of the disputes. Over 80% of the money that we spent in our advertising campaign has now been given back to us. The credit card company ruled in our favor, and it's been given back to us. We got back over 80% of the money that we put into the advertising campaign on our Facebook page from the credit card company from doing what's called chargebacks. You can challenge, by the way, when some merchant or someone charges you unjustly or something is wrong, or you can challenge your payment on your credit card. It's called a chargeback. And we did that. And despite the fact that this was a difficult, you know, this was a very difficult issue, and we got over 80% of our money back now. It's been given back to us. They still haven't ruled on one of the charges that is still there. You know, the remaining less than 20%, they did rule against us on a few of the charges, unfortunately, which is unjust, but they did. And then there's one remaining charge that they still have to make a ruling on. So, but of the total money that we spent there, and I don't want to give the exact amount because I don't want our enemies to know exactly what we're doing or how we do it. But of the total money that we spent in that advertising campaign on Facebook, of the total, over 80% has been returned to us, is now back in our hands. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And that really is a miracle. That's wonderful news. So we wound up spending much less, much, much less than what we initially expected. And it may, by the way, the 80%, it may turn into even more, because we have one of the chargebacks that we're still contending with, that we're still challenging, hasn't been ruled on yet, just one. There were 15 altogether. There were 15 charges altogether. 14 out of the 15 have been ruled upon. There was one still left. So we may get even more. We may get more money back, God willing. But we wound up spending much, much less, much, much less than what we initially anticipated. Thank God. And so that's very, very good news for us, Baruch Hashem. And so we wound up getting exposure to hundreds of thousands of Israeli Jews. And we wound up getting the vast majority of our money back that we had to pay for the advertising campaign because of the injustice Facebook did to us by taking our page down. We got all of that, and we're getting the vast majority of our money back. So we just want you to know that your dollar goes very far with us. I mean, with us, we fight for every dollar, and we fight for our rights, and we make sure that our rights are preserved as much as we can. And God willing, we'll have a good, I hope we'll be able to get a decent budget together in order to advertise our Hebrew page and in order to get a lot of people coming to our Hebrew page to make it a page that has a big influence on what happens in the land of Israel. God willing, with your help, it can happen. With your help, it can happen. When the day comes that we have several million dollars, if you give me several million dollars in our budget, within one year, we will be a mass movement and we will change Jewish history. Within 1 year, if we have several million dollars. And that's nothing. Several million dollars nowadays, in terms of organizations and what they spend, is a joke, is nothing. But for us, that would be enough to turn us into a mass movement. That's how much we would be filling a vacuum. That's how much our appeal is, if only we reach the people of Israel with our message. A certain percentage of the people of Israel are ready for our message. So I think that overall, this is good news and a very good week. But we need your help. This has got to be a team effort. We want to publicize these pages and make them as good as possible. We want your financial support so that we can advertise the Hebrew page as much as possible. We're going to do our best to make this a major effort so that we can have a big influence on what happens in Israel, in America, and throughout the world to make this a better world. to do our job, to do what God commands us to do in working to make this a better world. Okay, anyway, that's the news for this week. Again, I think it's very positive, and I think our members were really pleased. I think when you went to the page, I think most of you were pleased to see it. I think almost everybody thought that the pages were excellent and were really pleased to see it. And if we all work as a team to publicize this, we can make these pages something that can really reach a lot of people, God willing, and change a lot of minds and wake a lot of people up. If we do that, if we wake a lot of people up, we can change Jewish history. All right. Let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great wandering samurai 81 who writes, and I quote, Dech Chaim, which person is the most disgusting person on the list? Elliot Spitzer, Anthony Weiner, Woody Allen, John Stewart, Seth Rogen, or Chris Brown, unquote. Oh, they're all terrible. They're all absolutely terrible. I would say Woody Allen, because even though they're all awful, every single person on the list is a horrible person. I think that Woody Allen is the worst because for so many years, he has done so much to give Jews such a terrible image, and to give Jews, and the Jews who go and see his movies get such a terrible image of the Jewish people. He's a wimp and a coward and just a disgusting person, an immoral, evil person, and the characters he portrays are disgusting characters, stereotypical Jews, the worst anti-Semitic stereotypes. I would say that he's done the most harm and that he has been the most harmful. Second place would probably be John Stewart, because John Stewart has a program for 1 hour. I think it was an hour. I don't know if it's still an hour program every week, but he has a program and he's a comedian and he has a program on TV and he promotes left-wing, evil, anti-Semitic causes day and night. Worked day and night frantically to help Obama get elected and help Obama get reelected. Everything that hurts the Jewish people, that's bad for the Jewish people, John Stewart supports. I put him in second place, but I would say in first place is Woody Allen. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Obama complaining over New York and New Jersey quarantining health workers coming back from Africa? Thanks, unquote. Well, I think that President Barack Hussein Ebola wants to protect his people from Africa, and he's willing to risk American lives and willing to risk the safety and well-being of the American people in order to do so. He is always fighting for the Africans, for the Muslims, for all the people that are hostile to America, that are hostile to Western culture, certainly that are anti-Semitic. Those are the people he always fights for. Because he's an evil, miserable, vicious individual representing vicious, disgusting people that create that breed terrible diseases because they're lazy, nasty, primitive, and just vicious people. That's who he represents. And that means that he represents a danger to the American people. So, of course, and by the way, when you say quarantine on health workers in New York, Andrew Cuomo already chickened out on that. He already is not going to quarantine health workers in New York. He already decided not to do that, so he gave in to the pressure. So, we'll see what happens. But this whole situation just shows us, do we really want all these Africans coming to America? And all the Africans that are going to Israel to move to Israel? Look at all the diseases they bring with them. This is suicidal. This is insane and suicidal. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to... And by the way, there should be a quarantine of people coming from Africa, and we should stop all flights. The Africans that want to come here, all of that should be stopped. I noticed that other trader, that other animal, Rand Paul, said that he was horrified. That's the word he used, horrified, that we're quarantining, that we're going to quarantine health workers from Africa. He thought it was horrifying. By the way, Rand Paul is the most pro-black candidate in Republican Party history, I think. He is going to NAACP and to all these other groups and saying he's going to free all the black drug dealers and all the black criminals, and it's so unfair, and the criminal justice system is racist. By the way, the criminal justice system is racist against whites. Okay? Blacks are disproportionately treated better. If you look at the percentage of blacks committing rape and murder and all these other violent crimes, they're actually treated better than white defendants are for the same offenses. It's true that there's a disproportionate number of them in prison because they commit the vast majority of violent crime in America. But Rand Paul wants to set them all free. Rand Paul wants to let all the crack dealers and cocaine dealers and heroin dealers, he wants to set them all free. He thinks drugs should be legal. He wants to legalize marijuana, and he really does believe that all drugs should be legal, like his father does. He won't come out and say it now, but his father openly said it, and he supported his father for president, and he's always been a supporter of the libertarian position that all drugs should be legal, and we should let the crack and cocaine and heroin pushers run around in the streets openly. And if that happens, you won't be able to leave your home. You won't be able to do anything. This country will become just like Africa. But that's someone who's, you know, and that's in the Republican Party. He's calling himself a Republican, this filthy animal, Rand Paul. Rand Paul, Ron Paul. Anyway, and he's complaining, you know, he also complains about the ID, voter ID laws. He's against that. In other words, he's basically running on the Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan platform. He's going to run as the defender of Sharpton and Jackson and Farrakhan in the Republican Party. Rand Paul. What a sick country this is. Thank you, Joe, for the question. And now we go to the great Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, in 2007, Yazidi girl was publicly executed for converting to Islam. Apostasy among Yazidis was unheard of ever since. Jews should do the same to at least one Jewish traitor. No more weddings between self-hating kikes and Arab Muslim Nazis then, unquote. Well, Smash Islam, I understand the point you're making. You know, I have to be very careful what I say because we're law-abiding and we wouldn't violate any laws of the United States or of Israel. So I have to be careful what I say. In terms of, I'm certainly not advocating that people go out and start killing people, because there'd be a legal issue there if I ever said something like that. But I will say that under Torah law, a Jew who leaves the Jewish faith is committing the worst type of treason. And the penalty under the Torah law for that is death. The penalty under the Torah law for that is death. That's what the Torah says. That's not what it's not Chaim ben Pesach is not saying that the Torah says that. I'm just saying for public information, the Torah says that Jews who are traitors, the penalty happens to be death. Now, we are a law-abiding organization, of course. We are an organization that never breaks any laws and I even watch my language, even though I probably could say more than I'm saying now, but I'm so cautious and I'm so moderate and I'm so wonderful. I watch everything I say. But the Torah is very clear about this, and there's no question that if a Jewish girl who wants to marry Muslims, for instance, which thousands of Jewish girls in Israel have done, if the Torah penalty was enacted against some of these traitors, there's no question it would be a tremendous deterrent. There's no doubt about that. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, USA's turning bluer by the day, whites too. No question about that. No question about that. Whites, well, you know, Obama's policies are such a disastrous failure that I think that there may be a chance to turn the white majority around, or at least a lot of the white majority around. And I think in this next election, hopefully we'll see some of that happen. We'll see what will happen in terms of the election campaign. When you say whites are also turning bluer, and you know, this term blue and red, I don't even like that term. You know why they say blue and red? How come they call the Republicans red and the Democrats blue? How come they never call the Democrats red? Because the red is associated with the communists, so they wouldn't call the Democrats. The Democrats should be red because their policies and philosophies are Marxist policies. They're the ones who should be called red. But anyway, this is just another example of the media, you know, a media bias. The media is the one that started these terms, blue and red. But your point about the country, the country demographically and philosophically going to the left, there's no question there's been a trend in that direction. But I don't think it's over yet. I don't think it's completely hopeless yet. 66% of young voters between the ages of 18 and 29 voted for Barack Hussein Obama in 2008. 66%. 4 years later, 60% of voters in that age group from 18 to 29 voted for Barack Hussein Obama. So it went from 66% to 60%. Now, according to the latest polls, the number of young voters in that category that want to vote Democrat is down. So the ones that actually want to vote, I mean, it depends what numbers you want to look at. Among all young people in that age group, it's in the 50s now, the mid-50s now, the ones that want to vote Democrat. And among those that are planning to vote this Tuesday, some polls show that it's about 50-50 now between the two parties. So you see somewhat of a turnabout, you see somewhat of a turnaround in terms of age, in terms of age groups, because of the failures of Obama's policies. So maybe it's not entirely over yet. I would agree with you, it looks pretty bad. The trends do not look good. Demographically, the trends look very bad. I would agree with you on that, but I don't think it's completely hopeless yet. At least we're going to try our best. In the 2016 presidential campaign, we're going to try our best. We're going to try to stop Hillary Clinton. We're going to try to elect Ted Cruz. We'll see what happens. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, do Jews pray for personal miracles often? Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in our general prayers, which we call Shmona Esre means the 18 requests we make from God, and it's really 19 because the 19th request is against the traitors when we pray against self-hating Jewish traitors. That's the prayer of El Amal Shenim, Alti Tikva, prayer where we pray against traitors. So it's really 19 requests, but we still call it the Shmona Esre. In those prayers, which we do three times a day, those prayers are generalized. In other words, we don't pray for ourselves. We pray on a national level for the whole people. We don't just pray for ourselves. But within the context of Jewish prayer, there are also many prayers for ourselves. We have needs for ourselves, and we pray for ourselves. And we do pray for personal miracles, certainly. And if a Jew wants to turn to God, if a Jew needs something and wants to turn to God, wants to pray for a miracle, absolutely he is supposed to do that. A Jew is supposed to turn to God when he needs something. When someone needs something, they're supposed to turn to God. But let's remember something. God knows best. In the end, if God doesn't give somebody what they ask for, sometimes there's a good reason for that we can't see and we don't understand. But within our own limited understanding, if there's something that appears to us to be something we need, for instance, if we're in debt, or if we have a, God forbid, a health problem or some other problem, we should turn to God. We definitely should pray. We should do everything in our natural power to solve the problem. We should, if God forbid someone's sick, they should go to a doctor, or they should do whatever they have to do to try to become healthy again through natural means. And they should pray. And they should pray. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, what percent of Israelis will flee to Berlin, unquote. I don't know, but just to put it in context, there are 6 million Jews, roughly 6 million Jews living in Israel today. And there are about 1.5 million Jews who at one time lived in Israel, or their parents and relatives lived in Israel. In other words, they're either the children of people who lived in Israel, or they lived in Israel. About 1.5 million who now live outside of Israel. So you've got about 7.5 million Jews who at one point in their life were Israelis, lived in the land of Israel at one point in their life, about 7.5 million Jews. About 1.5 million of them, which is 20%, about a fifth of them now live outside of Israel. That's the situation we have. Of course, if if there are Jews who are self-hating leftists, good riddance. We don't want them in Israel. We don't want them. We don't need them. And we're glad when they leave Israel if they're self-hating leftists. If they're Jews who are just confused or doing something stupid or foolish and there's hope for bringing them back, then of course we want to bring them back. Then of course we want to try to bring them home and we want to try to change them. So you've got different types of Jews who leave. Some are outright traitors. Good riddance to the ones who are outright traitors. Some are just Jews who made a mistake, who are confused. Those Jews, of course, are our brothers and sisters, and those Jews we want to bring home again to the land of Israel. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, discuss subway Negroes. Well, that's certainly not a pleasant topic, but it's a topic that anyone who lives in New York City is very familiar with. 86% of violent crime in the United States is crime from blacks and other minorities. 86%. In New York City, the number is much higher, much higher. When I was in Rikers Island, which is a horrible local prison, a local jail, when I was in Rikers Island, because of my activities for Soviet Jewry, I saw that probably 95-96% of the inmates there were either black or Hispanic. And the vast majority actually were black. There were a lot of Puerto Ricans and other groups, but the vast majority were black. And among, you know, the murderers, the rapists, I mean, the numbers are just gigantic. Anyone who travels the subways knows that the subways today, and for decades now, are run inefficiently because most of the people hired to run the subways, the conductors, the people working the subways, the vast majority of them now are affirmative action employees. So the subways are run very poorly. The subways are dirty and smelly. They smell of urine and excrement because these savages go around relieving themselves in the middle of the subway. It's a dangerous place. These wild savages who throw people on the subway tracks and as the train is coming, who rape women, who murder, who attack, who rape, who mug people and rob from people at gunpoint, at knife point. I mean, this is something that's been happening for a long time on the subways. So the subways, because of this disgusting evil element, and it's not all blacks, obviously, but, you know, almost all blacks have voted. I mean, you can talk about 93% of blacks voted for Al Sharpton for mayor of New York City. 94% voted for Jesse Jackson for president. 97% voted for Barack Hussein Obama for president twice. So almost all blacks vote for the politicians and the leaders that enable savages and beasts to run wild and to victimize elderly people, innocent people, people that are just trying to go to work or trying to support themselves or trying to do what they have to do just to survive and just to exist in our society. People that are nice people and decent people and just are on their way to doing whatever they have to do are accosted by beasts and criminals. That's the type of country that we have when we have leaders and people who support savagery. And unfortunately, that's something that has happened. And the blacks themselves are victims of this because the majority of victims of black subway crime and of black violent crime in general are other blacks. So, but they keep voting for the same people and keep supporting the same policies that make this, that enable these criminals. And then they wind up, ironically, becoming the number one victims themselves. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to the great paper cut who writes, and I quote, one, is it okay for religious Jews to use foul language, unquote? No, it absolutely is not okay. We're not allowed to use foul language. We're supposed to speak in a clean way. We're not supposed to use obscenities of any type, no. Paper cut now writes, two, is it forbidden to point out that someone is a convert? Unquote. Yes, you're not supposed to point out that someone is a convert unless the person who is a convert, and I'm referring here to Gentiles who convert to Judaism. If a Gentile converts to Judaism, you are not supposed to point that out to them unless they themselves bring it up. If they themselves bring it up and they themselves are comfortable speaking about it, that's fine. But otherwise, this is their own personal, part of their personal past. You're not supposed to bring that up. They're supposed to be treated like our brothers and sisters, like our fellow Jews in every way. In fact, you know, there's actually one commandment in the Torah. There's one mitzvah, there's one commandment that we have to love our fellow Jews. We're supposed to love our brothers and sisters, our fellow Jews. It's one of the commandments. To love the convert, gerim. To love gerim, there are two commandments. There are two mitzvot. They get double the mitzvot as an average Jew. Why are there two mitzvot? Because number one, we have to love them because they're Jews now. We're supposed to love our fellow Jews. That's a commandment. So since they are now Jews, it's a commandment to love them because they're now, and a convert is a full-fledged Jew in every way. So yes, we have to love them. We have to love them, and it's part of the commandment to love our fellow Jews. But there's a second commandment to love the convert. We're required to love the ger, to love the convert. There's another separate commandment in the Torah. So there are two commandments to love the convert. There's only one commandment to love our fellow Jews. The convert gets two commandments. Two commandments that we're supposed to love him. Why would the convert get double? Converts are volunteers. It's one thing to be born into a religion and to be born into something and you know, if you do what's right and you make the right choices, that's still very praiseworthy. The Jews, of course, having been persecuted and having gone through very difficult times throughout history. But someone who was not born into it, who comes from a completely different environment and completely different faith and completely different background and decides to join the Jewish people who have been so persecuted and so hated and have had such a difficult history, and they agree and volunteer to join in this, that's considered to be very praiseworthy in Judaism. Very praiseworthy. Paper Cut now writes, 3, are you familiar with Avi Lipkin? Unquote. I know that he writes about Israel-related subjects. I don't know enough about him to really express an educated opinion. I know that he writes about Israel-related subjects, and he has a website, and he appears, I know that he does interviews sometimes, but I don't know enough about him to really give a well-informed opinion, Paper Cut. I'm sorry. Thank you for the questions, for the great questions. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, 1, Macy's stopped selling SodaStream, unquote. Well, you know, I also wouldn't have anything to do with SodaStream because the vast majority of their employees are Arabs. I mean, they want to make the Arab Muslims who want to kill us more comfortable in the land of Israel. So I hope they are boycotted. I despise them. And a lot of these companies that are on the boycott list, you know, a lot of them, in fact, the majority of their employees are Arabs, are doing everything they can to make the Arabs more comfortable in Israel. And employ Arabs and go out of their way to employ Arabs. So if Macy's stopped selling SodaStream, I couldn't care less. It's possible Macy's is doing that for anti-Israel and anti-Semitic reasons. That's very possible. And that says something about Macy's. But I think we should boycott companies that employ our enemies. Dr. Dan now writes, who to vote for in elections in 2014 in New York, New Jersey, unquote. I think we should, generally speaking, I vote Republican as the lesser of the evils. That's my own view. But one very big exception is when you have a self-hating Jew running. A self-hating Jew is a chilul Hashem. It's a desecration of God's name. There's nothing worse than a Jew who's supposed to represent God's people and supposed to represent the Bible and the Torah and the laws of God, and is supposed to be a holy nation and a nation of priests and a light unto the nations, and then represents all these evil things. So the self-hating Jews, if you see a self-hating, if you see a Jewish name on there, 99.9% of the time you should vote against them. The Jews, first of all, the Jews shouldn't be running for office outside the land of Israel. Israel is our homeland, not America, not any other country outside of Israel. America is a wonderful country for the Gentiles. For us, it's not. For us, we're supposed to live in the land of Israel. We're not supposed to run for office outside of Israel. Secondly, the Jews who run in for office in America almost always betray the Jewish people and do the worst things for the Jews, are terrible for the Jews, almost always. So when you have someone like Bruce Blakeman running for Congress on Long Island, even though he's a Republican, even though his opponent is a left-wing Democrat and a piece of garbage, nevertheless, Bruce Blakeman, the intermarried, self-hating Jew running for Congress, is even worse. And we should vote for his opponent. As bad as she is, we should vote for his opponent to stop the self-hating Jew from getting in. And the same thing in the race between Tim Bishop and I think his name is Zeldin, in the 1st Congressional District on Long Island. We should definitely vote for Tim Bishop. He's a Democrat. He's a disgusting person. He's a complete phony and a fraud. But Zeldin, the intermarried, self-hating Jew Zeldin, who's the Republican candidate, is the worst possibility. And the same thing is true anywhere else where you see a self-hating Jew running. We should not vote for the self-hating Jews. And Dr. Dan writes now, and I quote, three, who is Joel Jacobs of the JDL? Did the FBI raid his office? Unquote. I don't know who Joel Jacobs is. I know I'm familiar with the name Jacobs, the Jacobs family. There was a Jacobs family that was very involved with the JDL, a family from Staten Island that was involved with the JDL for many years. I'm not sure that I know who Joel Jacobs is, and I don't know anything about the FBI raiding his office. I'm sorry. I just don't know anything about that. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now. Let me just check something to make sure. Okay. And we go now to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, surprise, surprise, Nobel Prize winner Malala is donating $50,000 to UN schools in Gaza. Now the left is even more in love with her, unquote. Yeah, this is, look, these people who win the Nobel Prizes, these so-called heroes who win the Nobel Prize, you know, they're evil people. They're evil people. They wouldn't get the Nobel Prize if they weren't evil. And I'm not talking about a scientist who discovers some breakthrough for cancer or Alzheimer's or some other disease. That's a different story. I'm talking about someone who wins a Nobel Prize for political or ideological or philosophical reasons. And she, you know, she's supposed to be the big hero of the day. And look at this. Look who she's supporting. She's supposed to be a human rights. She's supposed to be fighting for human rights. Well, she doesn't care about human rights for Jews. That's for sure. She's scum. And so is the Nobel Prize. Thank you, Da Vinci. And we go now to our great friend, righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, your thoughts. Saudi foreign minister to recognize Israel. Are those thugs that afraid of Iran that they are willing to do this? Unquote. No, I don't believe that's going to happen. I think that's just, you know, that's just one of these myths that spread around on the internet. First of all, the Saudi Arabians and the Arab world, all of them are committed to the destruction of Israel. The Muslim world wants Israel and the Jewish people to be destroyed, and they will always be committed to that. That is something that will not change. They will always want Israel to be destroyed. However, they are terrified also of Iran getting nuclear weapons, because it takes a Muslim to know a Muslim. They know that these Muslim ayatollahs in Iran are insane. They're well aware of that. They know that they're crazy. And so putting nuclear bombs in their hands, that does terrify Saudi Arabia. As much as Saudi Arabia hates Israel and hates the Jews, and as much as the Arab Muslims hate Israel and hate the Jews, they would love to see Israel destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, because they're afraid of Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. That doesn't mean they support Israel. That doesn't mean they support the Jews. And they would love to see the Jews destroyed, and they'd love to see Israel destroyed, God forbid. But in the meantime, if Israel happens to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, they would like to see. They would be delighted to see Israel destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. They would be delighted to see that, because they're also afraid of that. But that in no way changes the fact that they are also committed to the destruction of Israel. That Saudi Arabia has spent billions and billions and billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, to support organizations and movements and armies that are committed to destroying Israel, that have worked and fought and spilled blood to destroy Israel and the Jewish people. And the Saudis continue to support these monstrous Jew-killing organizations and will continue to. So, you know, just because they want to destroy Israel doesn't mean they don't want Iran's nuclear bomb-making program to be destroyed. And just because they want Iran's nuclear bomb-making program to be destroyed doesn't mean they aren't still going to work to destroy Israel. One has nothing to do with the other. Thank you, righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion of early voting. My opinion is it leads to more vulnerability to voter fraud." Unquote. I agree with you completely. I'm against early voting. I think that that all voting should take place only on election day. The purpose of early voting is so that lazy black people who and other lazy people. And again, when I say lazy black people, I'm not referring to all blacks, but huge numbers of black people are just lazy. And if you don't give them 2 months to vote and plead with them and beg them and offer them, you know, and offer them chitlins and everything else, you know, say, "You're going to get all this food. You're going to get everything. If you get out and vote, you can vote. So you can, we're going to help you." Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't do this, they won't get out and vote. So that's why they have these, you know, that's why they have these early voting programs. And there's huge voter fraud as a result of this. And so people should only be allowed to vote on election day. I agree with you. And by the way, Chicago Jew, in Illinois, there's a very important election for governor this Tuesday. Make sure, I hope you haven't voted yet. If you haven't voted yet, make sure to vote for Pat Quinn. As bad as he is, and he's terrible, he's a corrupt, evil Democrat. As bad as he is, that self-hating Jew, the Republican self-hating Jew, Bruce Reiner, is worse. He is much worse. Okay, that self-hating, that intermarried self-hating Jew whose best friend is Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, who supported, he calls himself a Republican, Bruce Rauner, but he loves Obama and loves Clinton and has commercials on TV bragging about how he supports abortion and how he supports gay marriage. This is the Republican. These self-hating Jews are such a disgrace, are so disgusting. They, at all costs, have to be defeated. So that's a close race. If you haven't voted yet, please vote for Pat Quinn. As bad as he is, the self-hating Jew is worse. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think the time will come when Jews will have to resort to terrorist, quote-unquote, attacks against the Arab Muslim Nazis as the Maccabees did to the Greeks, unquote?" Well, I have to be very careful how I answer this, Tag Mechir Tzedek. You know, again, as I mentioned in response to an earlier question, we're a law-abiding organization. We're very careful what we say. If I'm seen as advocating violence or some of these attacks that take place, if I come on here and advocate those things, that could be a violation of Israeli law, for instance, or of United States law. And we're concerned about making sure that we abide by the laws of the United States and Israel, which are the two countries that we operate in a major way. I can tell you that I think we all know what the Torah says, that Jews have a right and an obligation to defend themselves. So let me phrase it this way. Jews have a right to defend themselves against Arab terrorist genocide and Arab Muslim terrorist mass murder. They have a right to defend themselves. They have a right to protect themselves. They have a right to survive. Jews will have to interpret what I say intelligently and use their own imagination, but Jews have a right to survive and a right to protect themselves. I believe, and I urge, Jews that are concerned about the survival of the Jewish people to join our movement and to help us wake as many Jews up as possible. If we wake up a lot of Jews, Jews will be safer. The stronger we become and the more Jews we wake up and the more pressure we can put on the situation in Israel, the more our voice is heard in setting Israeli policy, the safer the Jewish people will be. So will that be enough? Will there in the meantime be a need for even more aggressive action? Only time will tell. But again, I believe Jews have a right to defend themselves. Let's put it that way. They have a right to do whatever it takes to defend themselves to survive. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And it's clear the Israeli government is not defending them. That is for sure. The Israeli government, the Israeli army, the Israeli police do not defend Jews. Do not protect the Jewish people. They are allowing the Jewish people to be slaughtered and allowing the Jewish people to be placed in grave danger. That undoubtedly is taking place. And we go now to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Do you have an affirmative action story that took place at JFK Airport?" Unquote. Well, I have an airport story. Binyamin, you might remember this story because you have an excellent memory. You have an extraordinarily sharp memory. And I think I've told this story. I told the story on the JTF television program that we had in the past. I don't know if I've ever told it on an SJTF, but I've told it on the. I told the story on the television program that we had. There was someone who joined JTF. He watched my television show and he joined JTF, and he was involved in airport security. And for many years, he worked at the airport and he was involved in airport security. And he became friends with us, and you know, we became good friends. And he said that, you know, he was passed over many times for promotion. And he was a very smart guy. He was very shrewd, very smart, very cunning, knew exactly what to do in terms of security issues. He understood what has to be done. He was a real professional, real professional. And he was passed over despite his experience and his professionalism and the fact that he really could have contributed tremendously. He was passed over because he was white. And there was a black guy there who was promoted many times, promotion after promotion after promotion, and eventually was made the head of airport security. I don't know if he was the head of all airport security, but he headed at least something there involving security. He was in charge. I don't know exactly how it works. I don't remember all the details. But he was put in charge. And his great innovative thought was, they have signs in the airport about things you're not supposed to bring with you on the plane for security reasons. They have signs there. So he decided to put up new signs. He developed new signs and had them printed up and placed all over the airport, showing a list of things, but he changed the list. He had a new sign with a picture, a cartoon drawing, of a bomb, showing a big bomb with a fuse coming out. You know these old black, like a black ball, and then a fuse is coming out like you have in the cartoons? That was what he had. He had a picture of that on these posters that were put all over the airport. He showed a picture of that, and then he had a list of things that you can't bring on the plane. The first thing on the list was bombs or explosives. He's telling people, he's showing a big picture and telling people, when you come on the plane, you're not allowed to bring your bombs and your explosives. You can't bring bombs and explosives on the plane. That was his big, brilliant idea. I mean, and he spent money on these posters and had the workers go around, waste their time putting it all over the airport. And they were, frankly, they were embarrassed to put it up because they felt that it was ridiculous. But putting it all over the airport, can you imagine? I mean, I remember I took a flight. I went to the airport and I saw the posters. And I had to fly somewhere for fundraising for the organization. And I see the posters up there, and I said to myself, I said, "Oh, it's a good thing they told me I can't bring bombs on the plane. If they hadn't told me, what is a person going to say? Oh, a person's going to come with their bomb in the suitcase and say, oh, now they tell me I can't bring my bomb on the airplane. And here I was, I thought I could go, and I thought, You know, I thought there was no problem with that. Now they tell me on this poster, if I only had known. Now I got to go all the way home and bring my bomb all the way back home. You know, can I bring it in the passenger? If I can't bring in the passenger as a passenger, bring it on as a passenger, as carry-on, can I leave it at least in the luggage compartment? I mean, is this what the person's going to think? You mean people didn't know that they're not allowed to bring a bomb on a plane? So ridiculous. So ridiculous. And this person was put in charge. And not only that, they had a meeting of all the airport people, and he was praised for the poster that he made. You know, when these imbeciles, when these affirmative action idiots do something, they receive praise for all the stupid things they do. Oh, that was so brilliant. Oh, I don't know what we would do without you. Oh, it was wonderful. You know, they're always praised for this. Complete morons, and they're always praised. And he was praised for it. They had a meeting of all the people from various airports got together. They had a conference there. And in the conference room there at the airport. And he was singled out and praised, and they showed the picture of the bomb and saying you're not allowed to bring bombs on the plane, and they thought that was brilliant to tell people you can't bring a bomb on the plane. If a white person had come up with an idea like this, can you imagine? I mean, how long would that white person still have a job? But there's a double standard. If you're black and you have a job, you can't do anything wrong. You're the first hired, you're never fired. You can always be late, irresponsible, terrible, the worst, you know, steal, rob, do everything bad on the job, and you just get promotion after promotion. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to our great friend, Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, which candidates does JTF endorse for this Tuesday's election? Should I hold my nose and vote for Grimm in the 11th Congressional District or sit it out, unquote. Well, that's a terrible election. Just another example. I mean, Grimm is the Republican candidate who's been indicted on corruption charges. Just horrible, horrible candidate. And of course he supports amnesty, and of course he supports all the left-wing positions. I wouldn't vote for him. He's going to win. I mean, believe it or not, he's going to win, even though he's been indicted, even though he's facing a multi-count federal indictment, multi-counts of felony counts, a federal indictment for the worst type of corruption, and he's still going to be reelected. He's still going to be reelected, probably. I think he's going to win. It's just a joke. It's just pathetic. I wouldn't vote for him. I wouldn't vote for either one of them in that particular race. Thank you, Russian Leo. And we're going now to our great friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, UKIP, UKIP, wins in the UK. Can a real right-wing third party win in the US? Thank you, unquote. Well, I'm not sure that UKIP is going to win in the United Kingdom. They won in the European parliamentary elections, but I'm not sure they're going to win in the actual elections for the British Parliament. Not sure about that at all. And they're not a real right-wing party. They're phonies also. They're also anti-Semites. The head of the party, has made statements attacking Israel. Another big fake phony fraud. If you attack Israel, you're going to be destroyed. God will destroy anyone who goes against Israel and the Jewish people. It's as simple as that. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. And this animal, this pig, made statements against Israel. He's a complete phony, and he'll also bring disaster upon Britain, just like all the other British politicians have done. As far as a right-wing third party in the United States, no, I don't believe a right-wing third party can win in the United States. No. I think we have to try to take over the Republican Party. That's what Ronald Reagan did, and I think that's what we have to try to do. We're going to try to do it with Ted Cruz. We've got to go against the establishment and try to take over the Republican Party. It has happened before. In 1964, Barry Goldwater took over the Republican Party and got the Republican nomination against the vigorous opposition of the Republican establishment. In 1972, George McGovern took over the Democrat Party and got the Democrat nomination, even though the Democrat establishment was completely against him. In 1980, Ronald Reagan did the same thing in the Republican Party. He took over even though the Republican establishment supported George H.W. Bush at that time, George Bush Sr. So there's a history of, it's unusual, but there's a history of candidates doing this. Even sometimes you even get a candidate who comes out of nowhere who's completely unknown, like Jimmy Carter in 1976. No one knew who Jimmy Carter was. And yet he wound up getting the Democrat nomination for president and being elected president because he won the Iowa caucuses and then won in New Hampshire. And soon he had momentum going and kept going and got the nomination and was elected president. Of course, he was, you know, along with Barack Hussein Ebola, he and Ebola are probably the two worst presidents in American history. But still, and maybe Roosevelt, you could throw him in as well. But still, a complete unknown, he was elected to the presidency. So, you know, things like that can happen sometimes. If you win the caucuses and you win the primaries, you get the nomination. That's how it works. So we just need a candidate who can win the caucuses and the nomination. That's not easy, but that's what we need to do. Thank you, Kalman. And we go now to the great Mensch, who writes, and I quote, "One, what would be your reaction as a prime minister to Swedish? And for some reason, I have, after Swedish, I have a problem with the word over there. I'm not seeing what word that is. I've got some distortion. Maybe it's just on my computer. But anyway, but I assume you're referring to the Swedish recognition of a so-called Palestinian state. My reaction as prime minister would be to tell the Swedes, you were Nazis during the Holocaust. Because of you, because you supplied iron ore and steel to the German Nazi army, they were able to continue fighting in World War II. They would have had to surrender sooner. You were Nazis during the Holocaust. You enabled the murder of 6 million Jews. And now you have the nerve. You have the nerve to tell Israel what to do. And you're trying to create another Holocaust for the Jewish people. You were Nazis then. You're Nazis now. You're Nazis." That's what I would tell them. And I would expose them before the whole world and call them what they are, Nazis. And, of course, their policies would in no way influence what we have to do. But I would be a prime minister that would tell the truth to the people of the world, including to the Swedish people. I would tell the truth. I would tell the truth to them. And they would hear a Jew that for a change would speak tachlis to them, would speak truth to them, and would stand up for justice and righteousness and be a voice against evil. Because our role, part of our role as a light unto the nations, as Or La Amim, as a light unto the nations, which is part of our destiny as the Jewish people, is to challenge injustice. We're supposed to be the voices of morality and challenging injustice. And that's what I would do when I see anti-Semitic injustice like this. Mensch then writes, too, "Why do Israelis put so much stock, even more than military aid, in U.S.'s veto protection in the U.N.?" Unquote. Because Israelis are so afraid that the U.N. is going to have sanctions against Israel. They're terrified of sanctions. You know, the U.N. had sanctions, by the way, against the whites in South Africa and Rhodesia for decades. And the whites in South Africa and Rhodesia were among the wealthiest people in the world. They lived very well. They had very high standard of living, despite the sanctions. Unfortunately, they stupidly gave in, something which they now regret, but they stupidly gave in and let the blacks take over. But sanctions, you know, if you have a strong economy, a strong military, and you can sell things on the black market, and you have a people with brains and technology, through the black market, you can even get through sanctions. The U.S. veto protection in the U.N. Who cares about the U.N.? Who cares about the U.N.? We can easily become self-sufficient. We can become independent. We can become self-sufficient. We can do what has to be done. Israel will be more prosperous and stronger and better off if Israel is not dependent upon the nations of the world. But Israeli Jews are terrified of isolation, being embargoed and sanctioned. They're terrified of that, because they don't realize the power that God has given them. And God has given them brain power and technological power and the ability to do things which could easily overcome obstacles like this. Thank you, Mensch. And we go now to the great Selhar, who writes, and I quote, "Who can submit original content for the news site, and what type, text, video, audio, can forum posts be displayed as comments under news items?" Unquote. Great question. Anybody can submit, you know, if you can write to us and suggest things to us, and if you have something good that you want to place, let's say you have an article, or if you have text, or if you have something good that you want to place on the news site, contact us through private message and speak to us about it. Selhar, you're really one of our great members for years. You're one of our great members on the English and on the Hebrew, forums. And if there's anything you want to submit, please contact us. It'd be our pleasure to speak to you. And you know, I think maybe we could work something out. Absolutely. You ask if forum posts can be displayed as comments under news items. Yes, if it's relevant enough, why not? Why not? Our forum, you know, we're going to newspapers and we're going to news sites. Our forum is like a news site. We can treat a post on our forum as a news item. Absolutely, why not? Thank you, Tselhar. And we go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "Jews often cite 6 million Jews instead of total deaths of Jews and non-Jews in the death camps, even when speaking to non-Jews. Isn't it disrespectful?" Unquote. Absolutely not disrespectful. The Jews were the only people that were targeted for complete annihilation by the German Nazi beasts. And it is not disrespectful. It is something that should be emphasized over and over again. The vast majority of people that were murdered in the Nazi death camps were Jews. The vast majority were Jews. The vast majority of people murdered in Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Treblinka were Jews. And Dachau were Jews. And to claim otherwise is a lie. Now, does that mean that non-Jews weren't also murdered? There were non-Jews who were murdered. And they are mentioned, by the way. That's not true. They are mentioned also as part of what happened in the Holocaust. There's no question that also happened. But no people were marked for extermination with such brutality and cruelty and totality as the Jewish people during the Holocaust. No people experienced what the Jewish people experienced during the Holocaust. There were others who died fighting wars. It's one thing to die fighting in a war, you know, fighting on the battlefield. It's another thing to have men, women, children, babies by the millions burned and gassed and tortured to death in death camps with the worst brutality in human history. That's a whole different ball game. So no, it is not disrespectful. What is disrespectful, PMN, is the fact that every single post that you've made since you've signed up here has been pushing some sort of anti-Semitic claim, the type of claim that the worst Nazi anti-Semites make against the Jews. Every single possible claim, you try to find some way to ask about it. And that is disrespectful. And we're going now to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, after you ended your hunger strike in prison, how did you regain your health and weight?" Unquote. Actually, Maimonides, they starved me in prison. I wasn't on a hunger strike. They weren't giving me kosher food, and I wouldn't eat it if it wasn't kosher. So they were starving me. Now, you know, I mean, if you're going to tell someone who only eats kosher food, look, eat this or else. Yeah, I mean, that's starving somebody. It's not as though I was saying I'm refusing to eat anything. I was saying I'm not going to eat something that violates my religious beliefs, that I'm not allowed to eat. I regained my health and my weight as soon as I got out of prison. Well, first of all, while I was in prison, I was never really healthy while I was in prison because everything in prison is unhealthy. Even when you do get to eat, the food they give you is very unhealthy. cheese. They give you just a block of cheese for lunch and a piece of bread. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, the so-called kosher line, I mean, it was terrible. It was very unhealthy. And, all you know, the food they give you there is very unhealthy. The inmates there don't care about health. They don't know anything about health. So the food was terrible. The only time I was able to regain my health and my weight, really, was when I got out of prison. After 5.5 years, when I got out of prison, then I began to eat healthy food again and exercise and do and live a healthy lifestyle. And that's how I was able to recover. Thank you, Maimonides. And we go now to the great Corey Deserved It, who writes, and I quote, "What is the significance of the story of Onan? Why did he receive death for spilling his seed?" Unquote. Well, he lived in a generation where people were very aware of the presence of God. It wasn't like our generation. He lived in a generation where people were very aware of the presence of God, and people were held, therefore, to a much higher standard because people saw miracles. He was much closer to a time when there were open miracles and changing of nature, changing of the laws of nature sometimes with the miracles. And so the standard for living, when you live in a generation like that, the standard is much, much higher than the standard would be in our generation where we see miracles. We see miracles like the Six-Day War for Israel, but all the miracles we see are within the bounds of nature. Jews win miraculous victories, let's say, in their wars for survival in Israel, but they win it within, split the Red Sea or have 10 plagues or do things that change the laws of nature. This is all done within the bounds of nature. These miracles occur. And so we live in a generation of darkness and a generation of ignorance and a generation where we don't see the same things that existed in biblical times, that existed in the time of Onan. So he was judged by a much higher standard. He chose to defy God and do what he wanted to do. And so he was judged more severely than we would be judged for that reason. And I want to thank everybody again for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.